Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show.
Hey, 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 everyone. Welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. You know me, I'm your host, Bruce Marable, CEO of Employee Cycle. When you know us, we're your friendly HR analytics dashboard. We bring all your data from all your different HR systems into one beautiful centralized place. But that's enough about me and Employee Cycle, because today we have a super special guest that I can't wait to start talking to. And so please help me welcome to the podcast, Eric Knutson, People Analytics Manager at Namely, to talk about how to use HR data to create your HR strategy. Eric, welcome to the podcast.
Woo! Thanks, Bruce. Happy to be on. Happy to connect on the topic of people analytics.
Great. So the first question that we always ask, which the audience is always interested in, is how did you get into the wonderful world of HR?
Yeah, that is a wonderful question. And I think like many people, particularly in the people analytics space, I had a bit of a windy path. So I was a psychology major back in undergrad, and towards the end of undergrad, I felt I was interested in pursuing a career in school psychology. And so I actually went straight into a PhD program in school psychology. But during the first year of that program, I had this realization that my interests were actually mostly focused on the organizational dynamics of education systems. And that was a natural segue for me to begin exploring careers that focused on those organizational dynamics and how they could be improved to basically elevate the success and productivity of organizations. And as a sort of byproduct of researching that career path, I stumbled upon industrial organizational psychology, or IO psychology for short, which sort of sits at the intersection of the workplace and research and data. And so I actually transferred into a PhD program in IO. And along the way during that program was when I started working in the space. So I took my first job in HR at JetBlue Airways, working on selection and assessment work, building pre-hires for their frontline roles. And then I transitioned over to Namely, which is an all-in-one HR platform where I work today and help guide our thinking about how we can leverage people analytics both internally and then also for our clients and through our product.
Very nice. And I was going to ask you to tell all of our listeners who haven't already heard of your company, which I'm sure everyone in HR already has, what is Namely, but thanks for already answering that question for me. So let's get into the topic around using HR data to create your HR strategy. So in your title, it's People Analytics Manager, which I think is super interesting. Because there's this big debate whether there's semantics or there's actually a difference between HR reporting, HR analytics, and people analytics. So can you first tell us what exactly is people analytics and how it differs specifically from HR analytics?
Yeah, so that's a great point. Or rather, the distinction is very real. And I think that conversation is still going on across the discipline. I would say there's a very interesting book that distinguishes between, well, a number of things, but the key differences between HR analytics and people analytics. Now, that book is The Power of People. And the primary distinction that is drawn is that HR analytics are actually analytics that are focused on the productivity of the HR organization or the HR team. Just like if you have sales analytics, you are focused on the productivity and success of the sales team. Whereas people analytics are more broadly focused on the workforce. So these are approaches to analytics that allow you to understand where the state of your talent is and help you understand what steps you need to take to help elevate that talent to really build better workplaces. And that's actually a nice segue into Namely's mission, which is to build better workplaces. And the way that we think about doing that is by making sure that we're providing HR professionals the data and insights that they need to make strategic talent decisions that do actually result in material workplace outcomes.
Got it. So before we actually go into how companies are using and should use people analytics, let's start to figure out and discuss when did people start using people analytics and where we are today. So I believe people analytics was originated at Google, right? When they started doing a lot of massive research around things like if the first person or if somebody's first day they actually met with a manager, then their productivity or their tenure would be longer. And they had a lot of different things around all their workforce data to really popularize people analytics, right?
Yeah. So I'll take it a bit further back. And that is really people analytics in practice has been a part of the workplace for decades, arguably really even a century. If you go back as far as World War I, looking at the tests alpha and beta that the army used to determine what roles in the army people were going to be well suited for in support of the country. And in some sense, that was people analytics long, long ago, although we didn't have the language to call it that then. I think what happened when Google built out its people operations practice internally was that it raised the profile of this kind of work being done in organizations. But in fact, this has been a critical part of understanding the workplace for quite a bit longer. I'm, you know, excited and proud to be a part of the discipline at a time when it is more common to understand what people analytics is and what it means to the workplace. But yeah, but it's we're a small part of a long history of using tests and data and information to understand people.
That's really interesting to take it back to those different war times. So from this 100-year-old practice that was then, let's call it, popularized in a mainstream way by Google maybe a couple years ago, where are we now in regards to the maturity adoption curve of people analytics across the board?
Yeah, so we still have a long way to go with adoption. The profile of the work is elevating, but a report just a couple of years ago released by Burson by Deloitte basically found that 86% of organizations are still at sort of pre-strategic levels of HR maturity. And what that means is that there's actually still a small minority of companies that are leveraging analytics to actually impact their business, and still many, many, many organizations out there who are just beginning to learn what it means to integrate data and analytics into their workplace. And so I think a critical part of the field that is often sort of neglected or a critical responsibility of ours is to help those organizations that are not at high levels of HR maturity understand the small ways in which they can move their company towards a more data-driven state and help make analytics feel more accessible to organizations that don't have long histories of complex analytics. Because really, data is democracy in many ways, and all organizations should feel empowered to capture the data that they need to improve the workplace that they run.
Got it. So the reason why a lot of listeners love our podcast is because we try to make it as practical as possible and make sure that the conversation is digestible so that they can actually walk away and do something about whatever topic we're talking about. So what I would like to do is to break this interview up into three main sections, which is: what areas am I looking to improve with people analytics? What type of data am I pulling from those areas? And then how do I actually track the results and ROI of the work that I put into to use people analytics? Does that work for you?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's jump in.
All right. So the first area, or the first section rather, what areas am I looking at when I'm talking about people analytics? What parts of my workforce or any other part, even outside of HR, does people analytics include?
Oh man, it's quite a long list. It's fascinating when you take a step back and look at the employee lifecycle, because in fact, we learn so much about employees from the moment we have our first point of contact with them during the recruiting or interview process, all the way to the final moment, if and when they decide to leave our organization. And there are so many steps in between those two points. If someone is interviewed multiple times before they're hired, we have a whole bunch of information about their skills, competencies, and experiences right up front, really rich data. Then we bring them on and we can actually understand what did their onboarding experience look like. And as a follow-up, maybe at some later point, we can evaluate whether that early experience actually impacted that person's whole workplace experience or their decision to stay or go. Once they're ramped and onboarded, we can actually reflect on our hiring decision because we might start to get some sense of early performance on the job. And so it's pretty early in someone's career with a company that we can actually start to reflect on how well did we interview for this role? Did we properly and effectively evaluate for the competencies that we felt were critical for this job? And we can do that pretty early on and in a pretty rich fashion if we've done the homework up front to basically record what that interview process was like, how strong this candidate was in the various skills and competencies, and so on. Once we've reflected on that hiring decision, there's a whole bunch of other things that go on while an employee is with us, which includes filling out employee experience or engagement surveys, usually multiple times, perhaps once a quarter. Some organizations are still running surveys once a year. They'll develop new experiences and hopefully grow within the organization or take new roles. We as an organization will reflect on where their compensation exists today and where it should be relative to the market and their performance. And along with a few other things, eventually, like as we said, at the end of this life cycle is typically some form of separation where an employee has decided to move on or the organization no longer feels that the employee is contributing in the capacity that they had hoped. And so we have all of these phases and all of these are touch points with employees during which we can learn about their experiences. And you don't have to boil the ocean touching all of these at once. In fact, that's not the most effective way to roll out a people analytics practice. It is often just to pick the one or two pieces of the life cycle that you both have the information you feel you need to make decisions and also the ones that will impact the company in really the greatest fashion. So you're looking for high impact areas where you have some data available or where you think you can start to collect data.
Got it. So based off of the work and experience that you've done in people analytics and the examples that you were just discussing, does it seem like recruiting and the top of the funnel of the employee process, so the sourcing, the tracking, the onboarding, the hiring, does that seem to be where most people are spending their time and where we have the most experience and best proven methods to using people analytics for there, or are we pretty much even across the board at this state in time in regards to where we think we can best understand where to use people analytics and get as close to accurate results as possible?
Yeah. So sometimes I think the best way to understand the movement of the field is to look at where HR technology solutions are emerging. And what we've seen with the explosion of HR tech over the last few years is that a hefty majority of these technology companies are focused on the first phase of that life cycle, which is the recruiting piece or interviewing piece, selection. And then the second most common sort of group of technology solutions is focused on the separation or turnover piece. So it's funny that, you know, the two ends of the employee life cycle have seemed to have drawn the most attention of what is really a pretty long list of possible stages and phases of this life cycle. And so I think the field has broadly gravitated towards these two ends. And I think there's a couple of reasons for that. One is that hiring right is one of the most important and highest leverage activities that an organization has. And so there's a lot of focus on getting that decision right because it can be so costly when you get it wrong. And then on the turnover side, there's sort of, I think, two reasons for focus on how and why and when employees are leaving. And that is, first of all, again, it's costly to lose good employees. And also, regardless of whether that employee is good or not, it is informative to understand when and in what manner an employee is going to leave, because it allows the organization to forecast or anticipate some of the changes that might be happening internally.
Got it. So now let's start talking about my data. As an HR person, how much data do I need? How many employees do I need to have for this to even start to make sense? Because when a lot of people hear people analytics, they may think big data and all these other terms that most people have no idea what the meaning is, but they're just thrown around because that's what the tech industry does. Doesn't mean that's what we do. We like to throw around a lot of terms that people might not understand because it's the future. And so just to boil this down to a position where most HR leaders could understand this, but when am I even in a position to start doing this? How much data do I need? How much historical data makes the most sense? Do I need to have a bunch of different systems across the entire life cycle? Or if I only have a lot of data in recruiting, does that make sense? What does that look like? And what kind of advice could you provide around that?
My advice is to not assume that you are not prepared to run analyses or start to learn from your data. I think one of the biggest mistakes that small and mid-sized businesses make is assuming what people analytics means is strictly statistical analysis of data. So when you talk about sample size, you have, or what you're talking about are a set of tests that do have some general guidelines about how small your data set can be to get reliable or robust results. That is true. That does not mean that small and medium, mid-sized organizations should not be looking at their data or that there is less value in learning from the data that they do have. Even if you're a tiny organization, I would hope that you're reflecting on the changes that are happening to your headcount, your teams, your turnover early on. It is not, you know, as if exploring some of your key HR metrics begins at employee 300. That should start from day one. And so sort of a key takeaway there is to get away from this assumption that you are too small to begin learning about and leveraging the tools of data analysis, because we can learn from that data from the very beginning. And you don't need to run incredibly complex statistical analyses to make data-informed decisions. And the way, you know, I often talk to HR practitioners about this, because Namely serves a lot of small and mid-sized businesses. And that is a common concern, that there just isn't enough data to start thinking about this. And that actually couldn't be further from the truth, because there are, for example, some key ways that people can start to connect their very traditional HR measurements like turnover to their strategic priorities as an HR team. And that's sort of the difference between reporting and analytics. Reporting it's a reflection, and it's a reflection on the state of the organization that is not necessarily directly connected or informing the priorities of that organization. And analytics is when you're actually using this information to make decisions that impact the workplace. And that can be done by taking a very traditional metric like turnover rate that you monitor every month or every quarter, and actually starting to find ways to link that metric to the priorities that you're outlining to your organization.
So while we're still on the topic of data, a lot of people think of terms like artificial intelligence, machine learning, predictive analytics when they hear people analytics. Are they the same thing? Can you perform and execute on a people analytics strategy without having the AI, ML, predictive? Are they the same? Is it a part of it? Can you have predictive without it, but then sometimes you need it? What does that look like? Because I also hear HR leaders saying, well, I can't do any of this because we don't have an analyst or we don't have a data scientist. So in the same vein, how do you explain this to our audience?
Yeah, I think these are not synonyms. People analytics, machine learning, AI are not synonyms. Well, arguably machine learning and AI are, but they're not the same thing as people analytics. People analytics is learning from your HR data, connecting those to material decisions that you're making internally, ideally decisions that advance you towards the strategic mission of your HR team or your company at large. AI and ML are the methods that we can use to study some, well, we can do a couple things with them. We can study some complex patterns in our data, and then the methods are ways that we can actually absorb those patterns and produce, for example, some guidance on whether an employee is going to leave our organization and the probability with which that is likely to occur. Or it could be something as simple as taking a whole bunch of unstructured data, for example, the data we see in survey work, and imposing some structure on that data that is more useful for reporting so we can understand patterns and themes that emerge from these unstructured data points. And so these are actually methods that we use to understand our organization. And so they are methods we can use when we're conducting people analytics, but they themselves are not people analytics. And people analytics can exist without using machine learning and artificial intelligence tools.
And then another term to wrap up the questions around data is around data integrity. A lot of HR people and just anyone in general who's working with data constantly hears the term data integrity. Garbage in, garbage out is the cliche term that people use, meaning if you have bad data, then any reporting you do on top of that data will also be exponentially worse because now you're projecting off of bad data. And so can you just spend a minute or two explaining how poor data integrity or lack of data integrity could potentially negatively affect and impact your people analytics strategy, and how should you go about fixing that?
Yeah, so data integrity is a huge and very common issue when HR teams are getting started thinking about regular reporting and then elevating to deeper analytics work. My recommendation there is primarily to focus your cleaning efforts, that is the time you're spending actually cleaning up your data, on areas of your data that advance, like the one or two areas of people analytics that you've decided to explore. So there is likely some form of messiness across most or all of the areas of HR data, and you don't need to boil the ocean by cleaning all of that at once. If you know that your particular effort today is focused on using interview ratings of competencies to understand if someone is likely to perform well early in the job, then what you want to do is make sure that your interviewers are inputting their feedback on every candidate, that when they're reviewing candidates on specific skills or competencies, those skills and competencies are from a standardized clean list, because that makes it easier to report on these. And also, once this person is on the job, you want to make sure that any performance-related data is also structured and clean and complete so that you have a rich picture of how someone has performed early on, and also a rich picture of how someone performed during the recruiting process. Now, you may have small patches of dirty data across other phases of your lifecycle data, but if your key priority today is connecting someone's interview performance to their early performance, then your sort of data hygiene efforts should be focused on those two areas first. Don't get too consumed in cleaning up the other stuff unless you have the resources and the bandwidth to have others support in cleaning up those areas as well. So basically, be thoughtful and careful with how you're spending your time so that you're doing it in a way that advances your analysis plan and not sort of arbitrarily spends time on things that are not going to have concrete, tangible impact early on.
Nice. That was great. And then the last question for this section is, now that I know what areas I'm looking at, I have a good understanding around how I'm managing my data and the systems that I'm pulling from, some of the metrics that I'm looking at, what kind of results should I be looking for after implementing a people analytics strategy? And ultimately, based off of our topic, how do I turn this into my HR strategy? How am I informing or creating my strategy from the results that I'm finding from my people analytics strategy?
Yeah, so a couple things. The early results that you're looking for are simply a hunger and appetite among leaders for more. if you have leaders coming to you asking for more, you're doing something right and something that is valuable to the business. And so that is really the initial result that you're looking for. If you're not getting that reaction from your leadership, perhaps you could benefit from sitting down with a handful of those leaders to discuss the ways in which you can leverage talent data to better inform their decisions. Leaders are making decisions all day, every day, and they know what kinds of decisions they make. They don't know how your insights from talent data can help them make better decisions. And so part of your job early on is to sit down with leaders and hear about what their decision-making process looks like and all of the decisions they're making on a daily basis, and work backwards from there to identify what is sort of the low-hanging fruit that I want to tackle and prove value in this people analytics work early, so that I can build credibility among my leadership team and they know I'm a resource for them as they're making decisions about their people. Once you have that buy-in and that credibility amongst your leadership team, the strategy with which you, or the strategy that you pursue through people analytics, falls quite naturally out of that, because you naturally understand where you can have the largest impact for the company because you've gone straight to the source, the people who are steering the ship, so to say. And you can be at the forefront of that, but early on that involves a whole lot of listening.
Perfect. So now we're going to go into my favorite part of the podcast, which is what I like to refer to as the real, the random, and ridiculous, where I ask you a question from each bucket. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. So the real question for everyone that's heard this episode before, you know what it is, because it's the same every time. And that's, do you like to eat bread pudding? And if so, how do you like it made?
Oh, man. Yeah, of course. Who doesn't like bread pudding?
And you'd be surprised. I've had some guests that don't, and I don't know if they'll ever be asked to come back.
That's a shame. So, my criteria is a crispy top. I need that. If it has that, pretty easy to please otherwise.
Nice. Great answer. Next time I'm in New York, I'll bring you some bread pudding.
All right, crispy.
So the random question. Yep, I'll make sure it's crispy. Random question. To get to know you a little bit, what was the last TV show that you've ever binged, or podcast that you binge listened to? Either one.
Man, binged. Recently, I binged The Handmaid's Tale.
Ah, I have not watched that yet.
Yep.
But I heard it's disturbing.
Yeah, it is. Sad story. But yeah, just wonderfully acted and good writing.
Awesome. And then the last question, the ridiculous one. What's the most ridiculous reason you've heard from any HR leader, CEO, or any executive as to why they don't believe in people analytics, or that they don't think companies should use it?
Oh, wow. That is a great question. I think I'm gonna have to take a pass on this, because I have fortunately worked for two organizations that value HR at an extremely high level, particularly, you know, the organization I'm at now, namely, we are an HR technology company that, you know, that has a mission to build better workplaces, and we are living that mission every day. And so the leaders we hire, along with every hire we make, values the contributions that HR can make to a business. And so, yeah, so I can't speak from a place of personal experience on this, and I feel fortunate to be able to say that.
Let me rephrase this question. This wasn't about the companies that you work for. It's about in the world, whether you've been at a conference or just people in general. So there's people that say, oh, employee engagement surveys suck. There's no reason why we should do them. Or there are people that saying you shouldn't give employees all these crazy perks, like Wow or Stacks or all this stuff, because it's just a waste of money. And so there's always people that think that certain things that people are doing in any industry, but especially in HR, I'll call them the haters, for example, on different things. So I'm just curious, are there any barriers that you see or hear on a consistent basis that you're just thinking, man, I can't believe so many people think this about people analytics?
Yeah, well, I would say the key concern and challenge of people analytics is that we have yet to prove to some people that we are not trying to build machines that make leaders less useful, valuable, or critical to the organization. And that's sort of where some of the fear of AI and ML comes into play, when people don't understand what the true goal of these efforts are. And the goal of that is to support decisions, not to replace the insight and value that people are contributing to the workplace. And so while there's a whole lot of fear there, I think as a discipline, people analytics can do a lot, do ourselves a big service by making sure that we communicate that clearly to all leaders, that we're there to help supplement and inform their decisions, not replace them.
That was awesome. And you've been such an awesome interview guest. Eric, thanks for being on the podcast. So where can people find you and Namely online?
Yeah, so you can find me on LinkedIn or on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Eric Nudd. That is E-R-I-C-K-N-U-D. So you can engage with me on Twitter. I'm there pretty frequently. And you can find Namely at namely.com.
Perfect. And we'll be sure to put all that info in to the show notes. So HR leaders, people operations leaders, anyone else who's listening, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Eric dropped so many gems of knowledge and just really got us up to speed on people analytics. So we really appreciated him on this episode. And if you appreciated him and just this episode in general, then please, 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 please go to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating. Also, if you haven't downloaded us on your favorite podcast player on your phone or computer or wherever you're listening to your podcast from, make sure you do that. It's the Employee Cycle Podcast. And again, thank you so much for listening. So all you HR and people ops leaders out there, please remember to continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.